Simon for Ventnor Blog at the Riverside. After the meeting between the voluntary sector, or the representatives of the voluntary sector on the island, and the chief exec and the leader of the council, a lot of people have been hanging around, lots of discussions. It's now a quiet hall, and we're with...
Mike Ballpit, the chief executive of the Rural Community Council.
Mike, you were chairing and organised, had a big hand in organising this meeting. How do you feel it went today?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good. I mean, we got a fantastic turnout. We just wanted to give an opportunity for face-to-face discussions about the inevitable financial challenges that are coming our way in the voluntary sector, for all sorts of reasons, not just about sort of local authority cuts, but also in terms of less lottery money and less charitable donations and the whole fundraising perspective. It's going to be a tough year or two for the voluntary sector ahead.
And there was a presentation done by Steve Byrne at the beginning, and then Q&A after that. Quite a lot of different points raised, I think, and a lot of interesting areas that certainly we weren't aware of. We've held back on the reporting on the cutbacks in the voluntary, and particularly learning difficulties seem to be hit quite heavily in this proposed budget, because we really didn't understand it too much. We didn't understand the field. But it seems there's a lot of people not thinking it could be done in a better way, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of passion, a lot of concern out there, that's for sure. A lot of anxiety about if some of these services are reduced, what is going to happen to the people that they've been supporting for the last few years of their lives. It really comes down to the anxiety that there is there about what's going to happen to some of the residents who are most in need on the island. Obviously, a lot of plans are being put together, but there's still that it's the usual in terms of it's the great unknown. What actually will happen? What will be the end result of some of the changes that are inevitably going to happen in the next year or so?
I mean, I guess one argument for what the council is doing, or at least to oppose some of the opposition, if I can clumsily put it that way, is that pretty much anyone, if anyone senses any form of change, then people resist it straight away.
I think there is a little bit of that. I mean, obviously, some of these changes that are coming are pretty fundamental, and therefore it's understandable that the anxiety is there. I mean, you're changing the whole way, for example, with regard to personalised budgets, which is the whole concept of giving people some money to then sort of go out and purchase support services themselves. That is pretty fundamental change in terms of the way things have been done for the last sort of, well, 10 years or more. So it's not surprising that the levels of change is causing concern, that's for sure.
When I was in the overview and scrutiny committee meeting, we're reporting live of the discussions that are going on. I wasn't sure whether the personalisation of budgets was something that was... It felt like it was being said that it was being done on a national level, that was something that... an edict that was being handed down by the government. Today it seems like perhaps there's an option whether the Isle of Wight Council does that or not.
No, it very much is a national policy, that's for sure. And in fact, what we're seeing with regard to sort of adult services, if national policies follow their course, will actually be rolled out across other service areas right across the spectrum. So no, very much a national policy.
And a compulsory one.
Yes, absolutely. This is the way it's going to be. Obviously, national policies do come and go. Whether changes in government will change the national approach, not sure. I doubt it, because I think all the major political parties are signed up to the concept. And in many ways, the concept is, of course, correct. The problem comes with the implementation.
Right. So the example that was given by Steve Bynum was there are situations where we pay for 100 people to be looked after in a year, but in fact only 60 are paid for, and therefore... effectively, the council is overspending on that.
I think the voluntary sector would always tend to say that actually they offer fantastic value for money. In terms of some of those examples, some of them are about the supporting people side of things rather than the personalisation agenda. I mean, the personalisation agenda does offer great opportunities for those who want it, but not everyone will want it, as we heard today from a couple of people who were saying that they really wanted things just to stay the way they were. One has to remember that...
And they were people who received the services, weren't they?
That's right, yeah. And one has to remember, theoretically, no one will be forced into having a personalised budget. I mean, that is the message coming down nationally. You will not be forced into it. The concern, I guess, is that if all the providers are being told that that's how they need to be operating their businesses, how are we going to manage the system in terms of those people who don't want a personalised budget? There needs to obviously be some contracted services remaining for them to then access. So it all gets a bit technical. But for the most part, personalization is going to be a good thing, but it won't be for everyone.
So how much of the budget reductions, cuts that are being spoken about by the council, being proposed at the moment, are related, directly related to the personalized budgets? Or how much of it is to do with those personalized budgets is one thing, and they're taking the opportunity to make cuts, and that's not disconnected from the personalized budget, but perhaps being used as an umbrella of reasoning?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of different areas. The two big areas that you heard talked about today was obviously the Supporting People program, which is about housing-related support, and the second bit was obviously around personalization. So you were getting a mixture of issues addressed today.
So as an overall, could you say, well, you know, half of it is because of the personalization that the proposed budget cuts, or it seems an unreasonable question to ask you, but I'm just trying to grasp the answer myself.
Well, I mean, some of the cuts, it's a tricky one in that obviously there will still be personalized budgets that people will be able to access and then spend on services as they see fit. What might happen in some instances is that some people who have previously been eligible for services may not be eligible in the future for personalized budgets, because they might sort of raise the bar a little bit in terms of who's eligible, and that's where some of the spending some of the savings will be achieved by raising the bar a little bit. Now,
So those who qualified previously may not qualify.
That's right, and this is always the $64 million question. It's that usual. There are always going to be some people who probably have been slightly taking advantage of the system, shall we say, but that's still probably, I'm sure, the small minority, and it's obviously those who are going to not quite make the cut in the future but do really still need support. How are they going to be supported?
And these are the people that were being spoken about as falling through the gaps.
Yeah, that's right. And certainly, I mean, the voluntary sector traditionally has always evolved out of addressing and supporting the issues associated with people falling through the cracks. That's what the smaller voluntary groups are all about. They pick up those people who somehow don't quite access the mainstream services but still are in need of support, and that's where the smaller voluntary groups on the island are so pivotal, and it's really vital that we carry on supporting them.
It seems to me that a lot of the ideas that are coming across in England now are things that have been spoken about in America over the last 5 years, this idea of embrace the voluntary side, I guess because they see it as a way of carrying out the same service but without having to spend so much money on it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there certainly is a bit of there's certainly some hopes and expectations that it might be a little cheaper to deliver through the voluntary sector, and I think that's probably true. It probably will be. We don't have things like sort of the such overheads associated with pension schemes and so forth. But let's not pretend that the voluntary sector, in terms of those bigger voluntary organisations who are delivering public services, I mean, they don't come free. They are still effectively voluntary sector businesses who are trying to run businesses. But the real additionality, the real benefit comes from actually from some of the smaller voluntary groups who are still predominantly volunteer-based, and they obviously do offer fantastic value for money.
Okay, so as a summary question, what next for this process, do you think?
Obviously, there's going to be a lot more debate in the next week or two, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of public debate through the likes of Ventnor Blog and via other agencies. Basically, I gather the decision is going to go to Cabinet later this month, so there isn't a lot of time. So certainly a lot of representations need to be made by people who are concerned. In a way, in some ways, I'm almost more interested in the detail of how we go about solving the problems, though, rather than getting involved in the politics. This is going to be a tough time for the UK and a tough time for everyone. And what we need to look at is how do we find solutions by working together to make sure that the impacts on the residents of the Isle of Wight are minimised.
OK, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.